done. Oh my.
It was fun to channel surf. It was kind of hard to do a little pocket pool after you're hitting the last channel button 50 times for 2 hours plus.
Done. Oh my.
And his whole idea of overanalyzing, oh, he's an alcoholic and he misplaced the belt. And how could you have someone champion like that? The fuck out of here.
Wednesday night.
Don Omite, you're going to have fun. You really are. Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Adam Page all signed contract extensions with AEW, as they should have. That was the only way to go. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Tony Khan's response to Triple H calling AEW a secondary company. We got some ratings breakdown to get into, a little bit of NXT discussion, a little AEW discussion. What's up, everyone? It is Wednesday, August 2nd. 2023. I am Don Tony, and welcome to this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Now, I will let you know right up front that this show will be shorter than usual for the main reason that this week there is an extra amount of content being provided. We don't want to overload anyone. SummerSlam is this Saturday, and little cheap plug, I know we normally don't talk WWE on Wednesdays, but this is an absolute must. Kev Castle and yours truly, we did another special episode of the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show. And we've had some fun episodes since we started doing things again in early April. This SummerSlam preview predictions and more that we did late Tuesday / early Wednesday morning is just on a different level. Not only did we have so much fun recording it, but we came up with some wild predictions and some crazy scenarios that could very well happen. Believe me, it's not clickbait. And some of the things, you know, if you know our track record, we usually nail it more times than not. We had some really fun discussion. It is absolutely a must listen. And that is not clickbait. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. And it was so good before we even finished, we were trying to figure out when we're going to do the review of SummerSlam. So go check that out. It's about 90 minutes long and it's an absolute must. But I want to open up the show briefly talking about Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Page signing contract extensions. Yeah. You know, upon, you know, Cody Rhodes' American Nightmare becoming Cody Rhodes documentary comes out, obviously AEW wants to put something out there business-wise to put it on a similar level. You know, we've talked about this so many times over the last couple of years. You see it. Something comes out and there's always a counter in some way, shape, or form, especially when fans out there make little comparisons. And, yes, Triple H making that remark, calling AEW a secondary promotion, that triggered people, which it shouldn't. And you look at the bottom line with everything, it shouldn't have, but it did. And Tony Khan had some interesting words to the Orlando Sentinel. We'll get into that a little bit. But first, as far as Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Page, I'm not saying this to criticize AEW, but I truly believe almost every single one of you tuning in is going to agree with me subconsciously when I say this. You look at the perception of AEW, it's that mostly wrestlers run the company. That almost everybody behind the scenes are either the elite, friends of the elite, it's mostly wrestlers. You know, you could have camera crew that you could replace, get on monster.com and get, you know, a replacement if you need one. But as far as the nucleus of AEW, it's run by wrestlers and Tony Khan. Everybody talks about the four pillars of AEW being Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, and MJF. I don't know who originally started that, you know, but for me, the four pillars have always been Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Cody Rhodes. If you notice, when Cody Rhodes picked up and left, there was never anybody announced as a replacement because that's not a shoes that you could simply fill by putting a help wanted sign out there. And let's be totally honest here. Tony Khan needs Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, mostly those three guys. Hangman Adam Page does not do as much behind the scenes than the other guys, but Tony Khan needs these guys a hell of a lot more than they need Tony Khan. Plus, being an EVP, that is a very powerful position. You know, having that kind of power, you know, you don't get that every day. They obviously, these guys aren't going to get it if they went to WWE. Plus, they get paid two checks because one is in an executive role and one is in a talent role. So they're set. And they have some pretty big power in this company. If they picked up and left, you know, people would, you know, put this out there that AEW will continue on. And I'm not saying AEW would shut down, but they would be in serious trouble. Because then you have all the people that are associated with those guys that work behind the scenes. What happens with them? You're not going to take somebody who's just a friend who's been working behind the scenes like, okay, now you're an EVP and you're an EVP. That's why, you know, when you look at things like that, you look at overall revenue, when you look at overall ratings, when you look at overall ticket sales. And listen, I know All Out, All In, everything that's going down that weekend is history, and it's awesome. That's cool to see that many people want to go to a wrestling show. But if you're going to base the overall company on that, you know, you can't do that. That's dangerous. And when I get into Tony Khan's comments about what Triple H said, it's actually misguided as well. And that's not criticism of Tony Khan. I think it's just a fact. I'll give you my opinion in a few minutes. But the Elite stay in with the company. Now, let me also clarify something, because some of you may have forgot this. But, you know, the Young Bucks, those two guys, were signed into 2024. And I think it might have been the summer to winter of 2024. And the reason why I say that is if you want to do a little Google searching, it'll verify what I'm about to say. November 2021, Nick Jackson had to clarify something that Dave Meltzer posted in his newsletter. In November of 2021, Dave Meltzer reported that the Young Bucks signed a two-year contract extension that will keep them with AEW until 2026. And Nick Jackson went public and said, no, we actually signed a two-year extension into 2024. In fact, I think they even posted on Twitter that week, till 2024, let's party for two more years. Now, 2024 could be January 1st. 2024 could also be November 1st. And when you tweet that in late 2021, that you're saying for two more years, there's a good chance it would have been deep into 2024. But now with this contract extension, you're thinking probably 2026 at minimum, maybe 2028. So for the next couple of years, AEW's nucleus behind the scenes is secure. Now, how they continue to coexist with CM Punk and some others who do not work well with these guys, you know, that's, you know, a lot to be, you know, there's no way to predict. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. Personally, I think there's going to be a come to Jesus moment where the Young Bucks and Hangman Page and Kenny Omega are going to sit down with CM Punk. I think that will happen. And I think they will end up doing some stuff on television. Will it happen in Wembley? Nah, I don't think so. I think this is something that, as time goes on, you know, you got to remember something. And I'm not saying this to take sides right now, but, you know, what got lost in the shuffle with the post-media scrum and the fight that the Elite had with Kenny Omega, that had with CM Punk, is this. You know, a lot of wrestlers in AEW had talked publicly prior to that fight how CM Punk has looked out for them. You think from Powerhouse Hobbs to others. There's a lot of people within AEW that actually do appreciate CM Punk. And if CM Punk truly cares about the progression of AEW, sooner or later, everybody's going to sit down. And I think things will get ironed out. I hope that they do. I mean, I know it's cool to have gossip and juicy fighting and grab the popcorn and sit back and check out the real life entertainment that's going on. It's like a reality show. But for the betterment of AEW, you gotta clear this shit up. You cannot take the chance of this happening again. You cannot take the chance of having so much stuff in disarray. And like I said before, you know, having those guys in those positions behind the scenes is a crazy amount of power. And that power, you know, puts Tony Khan in a very, very fragile situation, because if those guys get up and leave, who fills their spots? Who handles the workload? You don't simply just book an arena, fly everybody in, set up hotel, and go live, do your show, and then everybody takes a shower, goes out to eat, takes a flight back home, and on to the next show. No, there's so much more than that. So I think these guys staying with AEW was absolutely necessary. It was 1,000% the right decision. And whatever money that they got from Tony Khan, they earned it. They earned it. In 4 years, AEW, in my opinion, has done a hell of a lot more than what TNA or NWA TNA did in their first 4 years. I know it's a little unfair. It's a little unfair to compare the two. But, yeah, you do. You do. Because I was a wrestling fan and doing these shows when NWA TNA first formed and debuted in 2002. You know, when you have a company that doesn't exist and finally gets launched. I mean, there were other indie promotions that launched in the 2000s. Ted DiBiase had a promotion. You had Andrew McManus. Was that the guy's name? I mean, you had a couple of people who were starting their promotion and thought that they could get a little bit of traction. But, you know, really, in the last 20 years, for me, it's NWA TNA and AEW. Sure, MLW debuted and a few others. Ring of Honor came around in, I think, 2002. But AEW has gone to heights that no one else has. And whether you like the Elite or you don't, and I'm not big fans of those guys. I've made that clear on these shows. You got to give them, as people say these days, their flowers. They've earned it. They've earned it. But, you know, the idea of having so many wrestlers running your company, that sooner or later could become disastrous. Hopefully it never happens. But for now, they will be staying until, I would say, 2026 or 2028. And by doing this now, you know, this now puts all the focus on MJF. Because we're in August now. And by, I would say, early November, that's when that storyline about MJF, free agent, 2024, teasing he's going to go to WWE, that is going to go full-blown. That is going to be a major storyline. Me, my personal thoughts is that they already have worked out a deal that MJF is staying with AEW. I would be pretty shocked. And, yeah, WWE could pay him big, big money. And I think Tony Khan would probably match it. But, you know, it's not just about the money. It's also about, you know, the opportunity, working on a bigger, you know, platform, you know, becoming legendary, larger than life. I mean, there's a lot of things involved than just the money, because WWE could afford them and Tony Khan certainly could afford them. But one other point that I just mentioned briefly at the beginning of the show, and I'll just leave it with this. You know, if Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and Hangman Page, you know, because remember, Hangman Page is not an EVP. Okay, Hangman Page is not an EVP. Some people bunch him with the other guys because of the Elite, but no. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks are EVPs. If they would have went to WWE, they would not have had that power. They would have been, you know, wrestler contracts like anybody else. And what happens if WWE wants them to really pay their dues and job out to anybody they want them to job out to? You know, that some people take their characters and careers extremely serious. And I remember when WCW went out of business, you know, it was nervous for a lot of wrestlers. I mean, look, a lot of WWF wrestlers were not happy that WCW wrestlers were coming over, because there's only so many spots on TV. There's only so many spots on shows. And if some of these guys could, and gals could shine, that could cost jobs of existing WWF stars. So there was a lot of friction. But in the end, the Booker T's, the Rob Van Dam's, and others, they showed that they had extreme value and they were not embarrassed, jobbed out. Yeah, I remember the storyline with Booker T and Triple H. You know, I remember, you know, not everything was cake and ice cream. But overall, when WWE saw money in certain people, they got pushed. I don't think they would have been jobbed out, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. I think their value, you know, they would have tried to maximize that. But, you know, if they rub people the wrong way, no reason why they don't come out on an episode of Raw or SmackDown and they are embarrassed. But they are staying in AEW. That's the bottom line, and that was the right way to go. So, all right, let's talk briefly about Tony Khan's response to Triple H calling AEW a secondary company. Now, it was only 2-3 sentences, what Tony Khan told the Orlando Sentinels. But you got to listen to the sentences really closely, because Tony Khan misses the boat. All right. In response to Triple H calling AEW a secondary company, Tony Khan's response was, and I quote, "We certainly won't be the secondary promotion at All In. We're number one in the UK, on TV, and with a record gate. I have a lot of respect for Cody. I know these weren't his words, to be fair, but we're not secondary in a lot of markets. For the first time in a long time, WWE is secondary in a lot of markets. I'm proud of where we're at, and we're not taking a back seat to anybody." The last part of what he said, I have no problem with. But the thing, and I brought this up a little bit over the weekend, is that many times people within AEW, including Tony Khan, have gone public and truly believe that they are the number one product in wrestling. All right? So if you call yourselves number one, that means everyone else is secondary, tertiary, and so on. So Triple H doing it in a high-profile documentary, you know, that triggered a lot of people, pissed a lot of people off. The problem with Tony Khan's response to this is that you got to look at the overall picture. Okay, All In, you're going to get 80,000 people. It's going to be a $10 million gate, $20 million gate. And then you see a press release that WWE generated $215 million in Los Angeles for WrestleMania. You cannot take one event and base your whole status of your promotion around it. Because a month after All In, there isn't another Wembley scheduled. You're back to your normal, you know, shows in your normal markets. And what happens when you only draw 5,000, 3,000? What happened to the house shows? Where's the house shows? If you draw 800, 1,000? If the ratings are subpar, if the merchandise, if the buys are just average, when you call somebody a secondary promotion, that's the overall bottom line. And that's, I don't mean that in a Steve Austin catchphrase, but at the end of the day, you look at the worth of WWE, you look at the worth of AEW, you look at, you know, the difference as far as attendance. I'm not saying that fans should not consider AEW the best wrestling on TV. There's a lot of people that Collision is their favorite show, and that is awesome. But understand that that's not the overall product. WWE, it's about streaming media. It's about merchandise. It's about advertising. It's about, you know, investors. It's about, you know, tickets. It's not just numbers for ratings and a ticket sales for an event. And that's why even more Tony Khan and AEW is secondary. Because Tony Khan focuses on ratings and star ratings for matches and ticket sales for an event. And that's it. Everything else, you know, is not even a discussion. And that's not how you run a company. I mean, I'm not saying that Tony Khan doesn't run his company well. But when you hear him make comments like this, listen, for a lot of younger wrestling fans or innocent wrestling fans and those that don't know the business side of wrestling all that much, they're going to think what Tony Khan said was, you know, good comeback, and Tony Khan was right, and they move on. But for people that, you know, actually do understand finance and business and all everything that's involved behind the scenes, they look at Tony Khan. That's why Nick Khan calls Tony Khan a kid. That's why a lot of people in the executive world don't take him seriously when it comes to AEW, because of the fact that, you know, they score a decent demo, or if they're number one in a demo for a night, like, you know, suddenly AEW is on top of the world, and it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, all in ticket sales, beautiful. What happens after? What happens after? So, for me, I don't think WWE cares all that much as far as AEW and All In having the biggest ticket sales of all time in revenue. But I will say this, and I've always said this when it's been brought up in the last bunch of months, I think WWE, since they noticed how much how many tickets All In sold, that definitely gives them an incentive to go to Wembley as well, or go to an arena that might have more, because it shows that there is a demand there for good wrestling. And there's nobody that's going to tell me that WWE can't sell the same amount of tickets with the Bloodline and Cody and Brock and everyone. It's not a knock on AEW. It's not a knock on WWE. But that is Tony Khan's response to what Triple H said. I did watch the entire Cody documentary. Loved it. Loved it. I thought overall they gave a lot of respect for AEW. It told the right story. And again, I don't want to focus on WWE on this episode, but, you know, don't watch the Cody documentary just because they bring up AEW. I know that kind of feels like a forbidden, not forbidden door, but forbidden topic amongst WWE. But, you know, showing a little bit of respect of what Cody did and was partly, you know, not solely, but partly, you know, the reason why AEW is where it's at. You know, that's a good thing. That's a compliment. And I'm very, very glad that WWE acknowledged it. WWE loses nothing because of it. And, you know, it was a very, very strong, classy documentary. And it also shows you what, even more why he's going to finish the story beating Roman at WrestleMania 40. So let's move on. NXT on Tuesday. And I was very pleasantly surprised at the rating that came in. 717,000 viewers for NXT this past Tuesday. I thought that was spectacular, for the simple reason that coming out of the Great American Bash, and please understand what I'm saying and don't get upset by it. This is not a knock on NXT, but think about what I'm saying. There was not much of a fallout from the Great American Bash. Ilya Dragunov and Carmelo Hayes put on a banger, even though 80% of the match, it was just an ass-kicking by Ilya. But there was no hint of Trick Williams turning on Carmelo Hayes. Sure, that was in the back of people's minds going into NXT. And yes, what we've been talking about for the last 5 weeks seems to be going into gear now. Trick Williams ultimately turning on Carmelo Hayes. It is happening. It is happening. The first major seed was planted on August 1st's NXT. But outside of that, Tiffany Stratton retaining because of Tao being thrown in was not a very strong storyline that's going to knock the ratings out of the park, you know, a couple of days later. Great American Bash was great. It was solid from top to bottom. And Tony D and Stacks winning the tag titles was great as well. But there was not a hell of a lot of big-time matches and swerves and storylines that made Tuesday feel like, oh, I got to tune in. So the fact that they did 717,000 viewers, that is pretty damn impressive based on what we got. Now, before I give you the match results, Trick Williams. So this has been a topic of conversation that we have had for quite some time now. There was a segment where Trick Williams was sitting down with Carmelo Hayes. Trick Williams made it clear that he does not want to be perceived as a sidekick. He wants to finish his business with Ilya Dragunov, and he wants to be his own guy. So Carmelo Hayes coming out to the ring, he's now on his own. They're still buddies. As of right now, they're still buddies. And there was, you know, respect, hug, handshake, a lot of mutual admiration. They are buddies, and that's not going to change. Just Trick Williams is going to go out there, and he isn't going to miss either. Now, ultimately, Trick Williams will take out Carmelo Hayes. And the story will be, this is not personal. It's just, I'm going for mine. And that's, and listen, anybody who follows my Wednesday shows especially knows, I've been saying this for well over a year. Trick Williams is going to be a big star in the main roster. Trick Williams might even have an easier time clicking with the fans on the main roster than Carmelo Hayes. Trick Williams has something. He has the look, obviously, and he's charismatic. I think people don't realize Trick Williams, I don't think he's even had 100 matches in his pro wrestling career. Let that sink in. So he still has plenty of time to develop and season and get better. This is not, you do not hear me saying bring him to the main roster right now. You do not hear me saying that with Carmelo Hayes either. No need to rush it. But down the line, once Trick Williams and Ilya do their thing, and I think once Wes Lee and Carmelo Hayes do their thing, because that was a topic that we had the night of our Great American Bash recap. You know, we were trying to contemplate who's next for Melo. And I think most of you agree with me now that Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes is the biggest feud that NXT could put on, but it's not happening just yet. I don't know if that happens at Stand and Deliver next year. That's still a long ways away. But for now, and this was the name that we brought up on Sunday, Wes Lee. If Wes Lee is not going to have any type of a continued feud with Dominic Mysterio, Wes Lee going up against Carmelo Hayes seems to be the natural progression. And I'm still not feeling that Wes Lee would become world champion. But they had a tag match on NXT, and there was a little bit of a faux pas in that match. And as a result, Wes Lee nails Carmelo Hayes. We had Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee taking on Noam Dar and Ora Mensah. And this match was really, really good. Ora Mensah, you know, he's an underrated talent on that roster. If you go back and you look at his NXT UK work, you'd be pleasantly surprised how good he is. And Noam Dar has been around for a while. But during that match, Wes Lee tried to hit Noam Dar, but nailed Carmelo Hayes with the cardiac kick. That gave Noam Dar the opportunity to hit the Shining Wizard on Wes Lee, and they got the win. So a little mishap is going to lead to some friction between Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee. And that should end up your next world title, you know, mini feud, I think would probably be the way to go about it. Now, we don't have quarter hour breakdowns yet because the rating came out literally about an hour before I went live. I will get the quarter hour breakdown probably tonight, and I'll share it with you on next Monday's show. But the match results from August 1st, NXT, Lyra Vicaria over JC Jane. Dijak beating Eddie Thorpe. Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. You know, I'm not saying that they are on tag team championship level, and you kind of see a team like this, and you're like, man, that sucks that NXT don't have women's tag team championships anymore. But Lola Vice and Electra Lopez, keep them on your radar. They got something. And Lola Vice is still brand new, and she is killing it right now. Lola Vice, a year from now, could be what Tiffany Stratton was. You know, put it this way. What Tiffany Stratton did over the last 12 months compared to a year ago to now is where Lola Vice could be a year from now. Because Lola Vice is picking this up even quicker than Tiffany Stratton did. And it's two totally different characters, obviously. Two totally different looks, two totally different styles. Lola Vice, she is picking this up. Amazing how fast she's picking this up. And they defeated Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon. As I said, Noam Dar and Ora Mensah over Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee. Baron Corbin over Andre Chase. And the story from this one, and yeah, we saw this coming. We talked about it over the weekend during a recap of Great American Bash. Obviously, Andre Chase throwing in the towel, you know, was not going to be well received by Chase University. And, you know, listen, you look at Chase University, and Thea Hill is still 19 years old. She's got a whole career ahead of her. But Thea Hill is very upset at Andre Chase throwing in the towel. So asshole Baron Corbin shows up, and he starts mocking Chase University, starts mocking Thea Hill, and Andre Chase gets in Baron Corbin's face, and they end up having a match. And towards the latter part of the match, Thea Hill throws the towel in. You know, all right, you do that for me, I'm going to do that shit to you. But Baron Corbin catches it and throws it back outside the ring. It's funny. I guess the towel has to hit the mat in order for it to be official. But Thea Hill walks off. And Thea Hill, you know, she is contemplating leaving Chase University. I don't know if Thea Hill will actually leave Chase University. Chase University is a nice, fun little gimmick. There's no reason to split that up. Unless you're planning on some promotions for some of the people in Chase University, which I don't see happening. But right now, I think Duke Hudson and Andre Chase, that's going to be the fallout. I don't know who it will end up being. I almost feel like Duke Hudson, in the end, is probably better without Chase University. And listen, I never in a million years ever thought I would warm up to Duke Hudson and Chase University. His personality, I didn't think, would just mesh well. And I still miss Bodie Hayward. But Andre Chase is just perfect in that role. And we'll see what happens. But Baron Corbin beats Andre Chase, and Thea Hill walks off. So to be continued with that storyline and the main event. And this was a little bizarre. It was fun, but it was a little bizarre. Stacks and Tony D'Angelo, they're posing for pictures, celebrating that they became champs, and they get attacked by Gallus at the beginning of the show. So there's a six-man tag match set for the main event, and Tony D and Stacks don't have a partner. Tony D gets on the phone, and apparently has a partner for the match, and it ends up being Santos Escobar. I mean, okay, they're baby faces now. Listen, Santos Escobar was great. The match was fun. It was solid. I'm curious to see what the quarter-hour breakdown will be with that. But when you think of, you know, the original feud with Tony D and Santos Escobar, I know there was kind of a respect there, you know, because of two different families, you know. But, you know, all right, it's NXT. We don't have to take it so seriously, right? Probably the biggest story coming out of this, and it's not necessarily Von Wagner and Bron Breakker. For some reason, they are really milking the idea of those two guys having a match. I honestly thought it was going to happen at the Great American Bash. I don't know why they need a month to set this up, but we're already in week three. You know, if you think about it, a week before the bash, you know, Breakker laid out Von Wagner ringside. Then we had the bash. And then we had last night's NXT and pre-recorded challenges. So they're milking a month before we get this match. But probably the biggest news coming out of this is Cora Jade. Is Cora Jade going to be going to the main roster? People are wondering it because Cora Jade walked out, quote unquote, of NXT yesterday. You think about her, and we've talked about it for quite some time now. Cora Jade's been losing a lot of matches, and Dana Brooke was the most recent one. And, you know, you question, you know, why is WWE squashing Cora Jade as much as they are? It could be a test to see how she handles it mentally. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but for WWE, one of the things that they will do with young stars, up-and-coming stars, even on the main roster, it's happened. They will put someone on an extended losing streak or predominantly lose, see how to handle it. And, you know, some people don't handle it all that well, you know, and that is a test, you know, to see. It's entertainment, but how do you feel when your character is a loser? Week in and week out and week in and week out. So far, I haven't heard anything negative about Cora Jade backstage. I haven't seen anybody trying to clickbait either, saying that Cora Jade, you know, she's being dropped out because has issues with, she doesn't get along with a lot. No, we haven't seen any of that. So Cora Jade teasing that, you know, she's walking out, it's going to go one of two ways. She's either going to return unannounced and attack someone and beat the fuck out of them, or she's going to show up on WWE's main roster. Is Cora Jade ready for the main roster? Maybe. What do you do once you bring her there? Think about SmackDown. Think about all of the top-tier women's stars on SmackDown. How is she going to fit in any time soon? You mean to tell me that suspension of disbelief she's going to beat either Asuka or Io or Bayley or Bianca or Charlotte? Yeah, wish you could be just Lacey Evans, you know. And then you look at Raw, you know, there's a lot of secondary women, but what's it going to do? Lead to a match with Rhea Ripley? So even though some people think, oh, bring her to the main roster. Yeah. And what happens when she's there? What is she going to do? Beat Candice LeRae every week? So you got to think about that when you see things like this go down. One other thing. Dominic Mysterio will be defending the NXT North American Championship next week against Dragon Lee. But we had a nice little fun surprise on NXT. Rhea Ripley will be in the corner of Dominic Mysterio next Tuesday. But Dragon Lee will not be alone. And no, it will not be Nathan Frazier in his corner. Rey Mysterio will be appearing on NXT next week to be in the corner of Dragon Lee. Is it possible that Dragon Lee wins the NXT North American Championship next week with help from Rey Mysterio? You know, it's going to be fun to see Rey and Dom going out a little bit. And this is smart because Ray's on SmackDown, Dom's on Raw. And yes, I know someone's going to say, well, Dom was on SmackDown very recently. I get it. But for the most part, no, he's not. So having Ray show up in NXT, I like it. I like it. Let's see what happens next week. But that is a nice little main event. And, you know, I know some people try to, you know, I don't want to say cause controversy. Some people try to cause controversy. Some people ask the question, you know, sincerely. I don't think there's any Judgment Day overload. You know, people are like, oh, we keep getting Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio and NXT. I'm like, yeah, so what? Really? I mean, why would anybody complain? You know, the funny thing is that, and I'm not comparing MJF to Dominic or Rhea Ripley or anything else, but I don't want to say your number one favorite, but if, you know, let's say Andrade, or Malakai Black, or Buddy Matthews, or Darby Allin, we don't even have to use MJF. or Thunder Rosa, if I said to you that some of these people are going to be on Collision and Dynamite every week, would people really complain? Seriously, if it's someone that you like, would you really complain? You're getting more of not only somebody that you dig, but somebody who's a top-tier talent. And you know what? Give Rhea Ripley a little bit of credit and Dominic Mysterio as well. Yeah, they're getting paid. Obviously, they're getting paid, but they're also working more dates. You know, it's pretty cool to see some of these wrestlers. And this was something that I said 3 years ago. Was it about 3 years ago? When everybody was like, oh, WWE is erasing Triple H's legacy with NXT and this and that. And then, you know, we were talking about how when AJ Styles showed up, had a little confrontation with Grayson Waller, you know, like a year after that. You want some mainstream stars to show up in NXT, not have them perform on a regular basis unless their career is in major turmoil or it's just in a rut. Baron Corbin staying there, absolutely. Apollo Crews for a little while, absolutely. Dana Brooke, absolutely. But having some main roster stars show up, you know, anybody that's a fan of Cornette's podcast, listen to when he was running Ohio Valley Wrestling. And listen to when they would have some WWF stars showing up. You know, that's not only a treat for the fans, but it's a treat for the wrestlers who are trying to break into the business, make a name, get promoted. That is a good thing. And I like how WWE is doing it right now. It's not overload. And I think ultimately Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville absolutely are going to appear in NXT. They absolutely are going to appear in NXT. And we'll probably see a WWE Women's Tag Team title match on NXT TV. It's a nice blend. And WWE is not overpaying a lot of money by having one or two people show up once in a while. You know, it's not a crazy amount of money when you think about it. Plus, I'm sure it's probably optional. I'm sure some of these guys, hey, who's interested in going to NXT? You know, having a match here, having a match there. You know, some of these up-and-coming wrestlers, whether it's Carmelo Hayes or Bron Breakker or anybody else you want to put on that list, you know, some of these main roster guys and gals, you know, see these up-and-coming stars and say, you know, I'd love to have a match with him. I'd be a good test for that person. I think some of these people would dig it. So this is good. This is very good. Also very good, let's talk about AEW Collision. Because AEW Collision also had a very good rating this past weekend, the 29th of July. Did 739,000 viewers. And obviously, that is the second highest rating since they have debuted. And the rating was stronger, but they got to be a little careful as well. Because if you look at the quarter hour trend, there were a lot more peaks and valleys in this one. And if you go back and you watch this 2 hour collision, I think everybody will agree with me what I'm about to say. AEW did something different this past Saturday on Collision. And what they did was they put a very strong opener, you know, to get people's interest, get them in the door, like I said, get them in the door. But they treaded water up until the beginning of hour number two. And then they treaded water again until they got to the main event. You know, like you start off strong, you trickle down a little bit. You start off strong at hour number two, you trickle down a little bit. You start off strong again towards the end. That's a pattern that they do on Dynamite. And you don't want to start doing that on Collision. And once again, the women in AEW are involved of the lowest quarters of the night. There was pretty much a tie between two quarters of the lowest ratings of the night. One was Mercedes Martinez and Kiera Hogan. And then the other quarter was the finish of Minoru Suzuki and Darby Allin. Then you had the Tony Storm backstage promo. And the very, very beginning of Samoa Joe versus Gravity. But both of those quarters did 680. You know, and when you look at the overall rating being 739, that's not that far off. But if the lowest part is 680, that means something out there did the eights to balance it off. And that obviously was the main event. The main event of FTR versus Adam Cole and MJF. It started at 756. It peaked at 837 for the final. And that 837 going off the air is extremely strong for AEW, whether it's Wednesday night or Saturday night. And that goes to show you, if you put on shit that people want to watch live, they will tune in. You know, let this sink in a little bit. AEW did an episode of Collision in the fours. Their rating was in the fours. And people are like, oh, well, you know, people go out on Saturdays and it's really not a wrestling night. Well, guess what? You closed out Collision with 837,000 viewers. What does that tell you? If you put on something that fans are very interested in, they will tune in live. They, you know, of course, fans will ultimately watch, whether it's YouTube or I don't know if it's on, well, you can watch it on Roku through different platforms, but watching it on a streaming media platform in a repeat. The whole goal is to get people tuning in live, because that is what TNT cares about. That's what the advertisers care about. You know, adding up all the, you know, repeats and the streaming medias and this and that, that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, your prime time Saturday night, that's why I personally think, I've said it all along, sevens to eights at minimum, they should be scored. At minimum, you know, fives and sixes, oh, then, you know, TNT is content with that is considered a major success. I hate the people out there that will either make excuses for AEW or gush. One thing that's missing amongst the media that is really pro AEW is that demand that it's never enough. You know, you should never be content, and you should never feel that a subpar number is acceptable. And you do understand why some people do that. If you paint the notion that 600,000 viewers is considered a success for Collision, and remember, before Collision debuted, nobody out there was saying, oh, they'll get about 600,000 viewers on average. People said, what the fuck are you talking about? This is CM Punk and everybody else. What are you talking about? 600,000. Nobody said that. They waited until they got an idea of what this audience seems to be flatlining at. And they're like, oh, yeah, 600,000 would be considered a success. You know why people do that? Because if they get you to believe that 600,000 is a success, when it hits 700,000, it's, wow, they exceeded everybody's expectations. You do 800,000. Holy shit. They're on a fucking roll. 900,000 a minute. Oh, my God. But meanwhile, 700,000, and I know that, you know, somebody may say, oh, DT, that's not that much different from 600,000. Oh, yes, it is. That's 25% more. That's a big deal. So for me, 739, very good number. But that should be at close to the minimum of what they should be doing. And this Saturday proved. I mean, they had their drops. You know, they had within 30 minutes their viewership go down 80,000 at one point. Another point in 30 minutes, their viewership went down almost 55,000. But between 9:15 and 9:45 p.m., their viewership went up 150,000. Mercedes Martinez and Kiera Hogan only did 680. But by the final quarter of the main event, they were back up to 837, 150,000 more people. That's a big deal. That's a good thing. But you don't want to get into that habit where you get those dips like that. That happens on Wednesdays, and more times than not, when you dip, it's a hard time to get people back unless you got some major match scheduled. In this case for Saturday, they did. They had a major match scheduled. And this Saturday, they should pop a decent rating as well. CM Punk is going to be defending the real world championship, taking on Ricky Starks. And remember, Ricky Steamboat will be there as a special outside official. He will not be refereeing this match. He'll be outside the ring. You'll see a little bit of interaction with Ricky Starks when he rolls outside the ring, get into the face of Ricky Steamboat. CM Punk, not so much. But, hey, it's a championship match. CM Punk, Ricky Starks, a little cameo from Ricky Steamboat. Should pop a decent number, you would think, right? And speaking of the world championship, you know, CM Punk right now has the real world championship. Well, on Dynamite tonight, they have finally announced the first match for AEW All In. And it is the main event. Now, I'm going to add a little twist to this, and I'll tell you why. MJF will be defending the AEW World Championship against Adam Cole. Now, before I even explain what went down tonight on Dynamite, I will tell you this, and this is something that a lot of people will probably not even think about. It's the first thing that I thought about, and it was probably done intentionally. MJF no-sold everything that CM Punk did on Collision this past weekend. And when CM Punk revealed the world championship and proclaimed himself the real world champion and spray painted the X on the title, MJF did not mention any of it. So MJF proclaiming himself in the main event at All In, something tells me CM Punk is going to proclaim himself the main event at All In. Who his opponent will be, we have to wait and see, obviously. I will tell you this. You know, I said earlier that I truthfully believe that sometime in the near future, I think CM Punk and the Elite, you know, maybe Jericho's there and Tony Khan is, I think there will be a summit, and I think things will be buried in some way. Do not discount the possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it definitely deserves to be in the back of your mind, the possibility of CM Punk versus Kenny Omega. And the reason why I say that is because Kenny Omega tonight, after the Elite's match, he got on the mic and said, you know, that the reports were true, that they're staying with AEW, and even teased a little bit that he could appear on Collision. I'm probably reading too much into it, but you know me. I like to think a little bit outside the box. So I think it's definitely worth keeping in the back of your mind the possibility that CM Punk takes on Kenny Omega. But I truthfully believe that there will be a resolution. I know I'm probably the only person out there saying this. I got this gut feeling. I really do. I mean, obviously, they are both different sides of the spectrum, and they do not like each other. But I really think for the betterment of the company, and when they see that everybody's in, you know, to make this company better and to take it to the next level, plus, you know, they're getting paid pretty well, as you know, that doesn't hurt. We also had an appearance from an ECW legend, and we had a title change tonight on Dynamite. Now, I'll say this at first, not to be a jerk, but Hikaru Shida won the women's championship against Toni Storm. That's probably a little bit of a surprise for many people because Toni Storm doesn't have the reign all that much, and you would think that she'd, you know, generate a nice little run with it. For me, I think of it like this. Hikaru Shida has been on Dynamite maybe twice this year. In fact, I don't think she's had more than maybe five matches. Outside of the Jericho Cruise, she might have had five matches in AEW this year. And they main evented tonight's Dynamite, which is cool. I'm not criticizing it, but I will say this. You know, tonight on social media or whenever you tune into this, you're going to hear, this is epic. This is amazing. Wow, Sheeta won the belt. Oh, the women main event the Dynamite. Oh, the, you know, we love it. You know, oh, so the women's division is all resolved, everyone. So for 4 years of mistreatment because they main evented tonight and Sheeta won the title, everything is hunky-dory. You know, that's what I've been talking about in a lot of ways with AEW. And this is not a criticism to them, but this is just the style. AEW is about the now. AEW is about going home with that warm, special feeling inside. You know, it's more in tune with indie wrestling. You know, they are not trying to build a storyline that will go 3, 4, 5 months. You know, it's not going to be something that they're really going to focus on. Just because a storyline lasts a year, you know, and Swerve Strickland finally has his match with Keith Lee, that's not long-term booking. It's just shit's been put on the shelf way too many times. This women's division is not taken seriously by Tony Khan. That's just a fact. He is a diehard ECW, Ring of Honor, New Japan fan. He is diehard. I mean, that's just a fact. And if you look at those three promotions, and it's not their faults because it was a different era. I will acknowledge that. But, you know, as far as being a big predominant for women's wrestling, no. And it's pretty obvious. So, you know, listen, 200th episode of Dynamite. Sheeta's been there all along. You give it a title. Now we're getting the, I don't want to say the go home, but, you know, we're not that far away from All In and All Out because they're both happening the weekend. So they got to start announcing matches and they got to start putting things together. Now, tonight on Dynamite, Sheeta won the title and Saraya tried to give Tony Storm a kendo stick. It backfired. Sheeta hit Ruby Soho with it. The referee's allowing her to, like, hold it and tease it. She's going to use a weapon. Hits Ruby Soho. Referee does nothing. Then they tease that Sheeta's going to get spray painted in the face with the green paint. She rolls up. Tony Storm gets the win. Now, we know Saraya is supposed to have a match at Wembley. Could it be possible that we get Saraya versus Sheeta? It's not out of the question. I don't know how strong that actually feels for a lot of you out there. Jamie Hayter is a very, very big unknown right now. And even Tony Khan acknowledged that he doesn't know if she'll be back in time for Wembley. So she's got injuries, and it doesn't look like she's returning anytime soon. And with all due respect, I don't care how long Britt Baker has been there. Lately, it just feels like she is in no position to be fighting for any championships. But, hey, the women main evented tonight. It was a fun match. They got about 10 minutes. Sheeta won the title. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything is all good in the women's division for AEW. I said earlier that we had an extreme legend make his debut tonight in AEW. There's been some rumors of Rob Van Dam coming in. People were more inclined that he would wrestle at Wembley. He actually will wrestle next week on the August 9th edition of Dynamite. He came out on behalf of Jerry Lynn, who had a confrontation tonight with Jack Perry. I love how Rob Van Dam calls him Jungle Jerk. That actually will catch on. He's probably not the first person that has said that, but I like that. Jungle Jerk. You know, RVD, look, I've seen him on social media. I've seen him at conventions. I've seen him do a match here and there. So I know what he looks like. I know what he could do. He's obviously a lot slower. He's a lot older. He's put his body through a hell of a lot over the years. But he could still do enough. And him trying to win the FTW title next week against Jungle Jerk Jack Perry, it's a little nostalgia. I know, you know, some people out there, you know, think, oh, Tony Khan with his fandomhood, you know, for ECW and yesteryear. Listen, man, I mean, we pop when legends show up on WWE TV. I mean, why can't we pop because a legend shows up in AEW? All right, yeah, Sabu, way way, way beyond past his prime and in no condition to have matches. But for me, it was still a little bit of nostalgia. Sabu was a very big part of my fandomhood in the 90s and even in the 2000s. And personally, I still love the story of him showing up at my office in Howard Beach, Queens, because the FTW promotion, the Fuck the World promotion, needed a table. And anybody that knows those guys, ask them. They'll tell you the truth. They showed up at my office in Howard Beach because I had one of these tables and they couldn't find one at Home Depot. And they literally pulled up. We brought the table outside and here's Sabu hanging out in the car. Hey, how you doing? All right. So that was pretty cool. But, hey, RVD looked decent tonight. No complaints whatsoever. It's not going to be a major part of the show. It's not winning a world championship. It's a nice little nostalgic moment. I think some people need to lighten up a little bit. Just to give you the overall match results from tonight, Chris Jericho and Konosuke Takeshita defeated Daniel Garcia and Sammy Guevara. A lot of comedy with Daniel Garcia and his dancing. Now, you know, when he makes his comeback or it's his way of hulking up, like he'll dance. Like Takeshita hit him with a couple of shots and Daniel Garcia is dancing. Chris Jericho gives him a couple of chops. Daniel Garcia starts dancing. You know, hey, the crowd's popping for it. It's a little corny. Not going to deny it. But, you know, Daniel Garcia developing a little bit of a personality, that's a good thing. Don Callis really was the story of this match. I mean, the match itself was a lot of fun. Good opener. But Don Callis outside the ring, getting involved a couple of times, especially with Daniel Garcia. Towards the end of the match, Daniel Garcia had Chris Jericho in the Dragon Tamer, the Lion Tamer. Don Callis has a quote-unquote bat and nails Daniel Garcia with it. Jericho gets the pin, but then Jericho realizes what Don Callis did. And a little bit later on, when Jericho's in the back with Rene Paquette, he just walks away. So Jericho's a little bit disgusted that Don Callis did that. Again, babyface turn in time for Wembley? Probably. Who knows? Maybe we'll get Jericho versus Takeshita at Wembley. Just brainstorming, everyone. Just brainstorming. As I said earlier, Jerry Lynn, Jack Perry, little confrontation. And Jerry Lynn basically says he's got someone that will face Jack Perry, and RVD comes out. By the way, comes out to the Pantera walk theme. Tony Khan paying for that licensing. Hey, fit perfectly. Fit perfectly. This was your typical Moxley match in 2023. Anything goes. Trent Barreta beats John Moxley and Penta. Immediately early in the match, John Moxley has the barbed wire. I think it was like a barbed wire board. He was raking the face of Trent with it. Trent is busted open early. We had a whole bunch of table shots, chairs. Moxley brings in thumbtacks, hits a pile driver on Penta onto the thumbtacks. Later on in the match, we get a little bit more as far as tables. Moxley hitting the paradigm shift on Penta. Trent with a knee strike. And actually, Trent would steal a victory. You know, we thought Moxley was going to get the win on Penta with the paradigm shift, but here comes Trent, hits a knee strike, grabs the win. After the match was over, Moxley nails Trent. Blackpool Combat Club come in, minus Brian Danielson, obviously. And immediately, Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy come in. They get a big brawl. And then we find out later on that on Rampage, it's going to be the Blackpool Combat Club versus Best Friends in a parking lot brawl. And remember, they were in Daly's place. So, you know, their parking lot has been utilized quite a bit in the past. Orange Cassidy hitting another orange punch on Jon Moxley. I'm starting to get the feeling we may get Jon Moxley versus Orange Cassidy for the international title at Wembley. I think that is definitely... You saw some little crumbs being teased tonight. And I'll give you another one. When we were talking about MJF earlier, you know, listen, this is the devil in sheep's clothing. I mean, people are trying to convince themselves online that MJF is a full-fledged babyface now. Tonight, more of the Jew stories, you know, when he was a kid and he's Jewish, people made fun of him because he was Jewish. This time getting hit with a roll of quarters and, you know, that made him bitter and he became a scumbag, became just like those kids that used to bully him. And, you know, the crowd is chanting ADD because MJF says he's got attention deficit disorder. They're chanting, you know, he's our scumbag. And listen, MJF is doing a great job trying to convince fans that he's a babyface, but it's kind of mind-blowing. And you know what people are doing online. Come on, we're not stupid, guys, gals, especially those in the media world. They're going along with this because the casual wrestling fan believes that MJF turned babyface. So if we turn around and say, oh, this is all a ruse, he's still a devil, he's in sheep's clothing, and he's setting up Adam Cole, and everybody's a sucker for it, we sound like, you know, the guy that would say that Santa Claus isn't real. You know what I mean? Or your dad is putting money under your pillow, not the tooth fairy. You know, like, we sound like the asshole. When I was a kid, I've told this story many times in the past. My Uncle Joe, he's the one in 1982, was telling me that wrestling was fake. And I was like, Uncle Joe, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And that motherfucker, God rest his soul, I love him, but he took a VHS tape, recorded a few seconds of the Strongbows or something, and he started putting it in super slow-mo. And those VCRs at the time weren't that great a quality, but you could see that the punches were not connecting. And it pissed me off because that was my revelation that wrestling was predetermined as a kid. But you don't want to be that guy. But I have to be that guy because we know what this is. MJF's the devil. Period. But the casual wrestling fan, they are convinced that MJF is now a full-fledged babyface, and they want to keep it that way. Their heart will be broken. Their heart will be broken, obviously. We don't know exactly when. I don't get paid enough, and I'm not employed by the promotion, so I couldn't give you that answer. But Adam Cole comes out. Adam Cole tells MJF, we're very proud of you. And MJF gives Adam Cole a shot at the AEW World Championship at Wembley. And MJF deserves to be in the main event at Wembley. And now you see Roderick Strong in the back with a neck brace on, flipping out like you just ran over his pet. I mean, livid! Adam Cole's getting a title shot. Why is he so livid? You know, and then you have the Kingdom show up, and they're having a little bit of a confrontation with Roddy Strong. And I know this is a lot to digest, but all these little things are going to lead to matches. You know the formula with AEW by now. You know how it goes. I mean, as we said earlier about the Chris Statlander formula, on Collision, she's going to take on Mercedes Martinez. You know, there's no feud, but it's the Jay Cargill formula. Only difference between Statlander and Jade is because Jade was the heel, Jade didn't get her ass bitched out too many times. Maybe someone would confront her and maybe demean her with the mic, but they didn't lay hands on her because she was that larger than life and you had to make her look supreme. With Chris Statlander, you wanted to be the victim. You want to have sympathy. She's the baby face. So that's why you have people putting hands on her. But the formula is the same. Beat random person, another random person comes out and either attacks, lays out Chris Statlander and boom, match the next week, or a verbal confrontation. So we know the formula. And here's another great example. Here's another great example. The Elite. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks tonight beat Satnam Singh, Jeff Jarrett, and Sonjay Dutt. Towards the end of the match, the Young Bucks super kick party. Kenny Omega with the V-trigger on Satnam Singh. And at the end of the match, the Hardys come out because they're trying to even up the odds because, you know, everything that's going on. They attack Sonjay Dutt. Now, if you followed the storyline with Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy and some of the other antics, you know, and most of this happens on Rampage, by the way, And it does carry over to Rampage in some way this Friday. I'll tell you why in a minute. But the Hardys come out. They nail Sanjay Dutt, so he becomes a non-factor towards the end of the match. Jeff Jarrett's looking for a guitar so he can hit a guitar shot. But Hangman Page is also there, and he hits the buckshot lariat on Jeff Jarrett. So the match is over. And the Hardys coming out there is to likely set up them versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, or maybe Satnam Singh and Jeff Jarrett, or Satnam Singh and Jay Lethal, something possibly at Wembley. I mean, and Friday on Rampage, the Hardys will be in action. But they'll be teaming up with Keith Lee, and all three of them will be taking on the Butcher, the Blade, and Kip Sabian, and you could best damn believe that they'll probably have some interaction with Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh, Sanjay Dutt, and Jay Lethal, and that will continue on until we get to Wembley. That's what it feels like. Aussie Open retains their Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships, beating Commander and El Hijo del Vikingo. Excellent match. I'm just not really into Aussie Open all that much. I acknowledge how great that they are, but you know, it's to me, it was, you know, a decent match. Can't complain. But I don't think that's going to be a ratings killer, even though El Hijo del Vikingo was in it. Then we have the main event. Like I said earlier, Kawashita beats Toni Storm to win the AEW Women's Championship. AEW Women's Championship. Because Chris Statler is the TBS champion. And it was a good match. Like I said, 10 minutes long. Main evented. Close out Dynamite. Doesn't mean that all is good in the women's world. But, you know, putting the title back on Sheeta is very interesting. And that is strategic, in my opinion, for Wembley. Now we got to figure out who her opponent is going to be. And, again, Saraya, as ridiculous as that may sound for some, because Saraya has really not been doing all that much in the ring, that is definitely a possibility. Who knows? Maybe we get a four-way. Maybe we get a six-way. You know, it's anything could happen. But now, since we're getting closer and closer to what I call Wembley weekend, you know, they got to start advertising matches. Listen, they got their tickets sold. That place is going to be banging, and everybody's going to have a great time. And you know the card is going to be good. Even though, you know, some of AEW we complain about more in different ways, and, you know, we offer constructive criticism. But one thing is for certain. When it comes to their pay-per-views, they really do give you more than what you are asking for. You know, it's maybe the food is not top-shelf food, but you eat like a pig. That's really what happens with their pay-per-views. They give you too many matches, but, you know, and some are great, some not so great, but they definitely give you more than enough. So, your Rampage and Collision previews. First, let me give you a Rampage. Again, the parking lot brawl between best friends. John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli. Orange Cassidy will be there. He'll get involved in some capacity. And Willie Yuta, maybe, you know. But Moxley and Claudio. And, you know, I just realized it. If it's a parking lot brawl, anybody could get involved. There's no disqualification. So you know there's going to be a flat-out clusterfuck with other people involved. Swerve Strickland and AR Fox will be in action. Anna Jay will be taking on Sky Blue. And the Hardys will be teaming up with Keith Lee, and they'll be taking on The Butcher, The Blade, and Kip Sabian. On the Collision front, we got Chris Statlander defending the TBS Championship against Mercedes Martinez. FTR will be defending the AEW Tag Team Championships against Big Bill and Brian Cage. The Acclaimed will talk. The Acclaimed will talk. That's what they said. And the main event, CM Punk, defending the Real World Championship against Ricky Starks, Ricky Steamboat, outside official for that match. I hate to say it. We were saying it so many weeks with Dynamite. In fact, we probably did it for, what, 2 years? Ear alert. I'm going to raise my voice. Not extremely loud, but I think after almost 2 months of AEW Collision, I think it's apropos that we bring it back. Did he deem another week. How do you like Miro's Collision career first 2 months? Honestly, same shit as Dynamite when he was on. Same shit. Doesn't feel like anything has fucking changed. Andrade, yeah, getting a little bit more TV time than in the past. It sure fucking feels the same. The House of Black, the Trios Championships, to me, you could have one of them have a singles match. That Trios Championship is bullshit. I mean, and when you think about it, CM Punk has a title now. What's the face? Willow Nightingale has a title now. Ricky Starks technically has a title because they own Hart Tournament. You know, like, we got more belts. And CM Punk now defending the Real World Championship, which, I mean, honestly, I don't have a problem with it, but I will say this in closing for tonight. I got to bring up this women's wrestler to prove a point. Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa is nearing a return. I think Thunder Rosa will be available for Wembley. Thunder Rosa, I personally think, should face Sheeta for the women's championship at Wembley. But here's the twist. I saved the twist for the end. If AEW is going to allow CM Punk to proclaim himself the Real World Champion, coming out with an AEW championship, proclaiming himself champion because he never lost the championship, Thunder Rosa needs to do the same. Thunder Rosa needs to come out there, proclaim herself the AEW Real World's Champion, Women's World Champion, and maybe you have her go up against Sheeta, title for title, at that weekend. Now, remember, CM Punk is not taking on MJF at Wembley. He's not. As of right now, it's MJF versus Adam Cole. No reason why you can't have Thunder Rosa, though, and her proclaim it. But in the end, when Thunder Rosa returns, my opinion, it's going to look pretty fucked up that CM Punk is allowed to parade himself, calling himself the Real World Champion, since he never got pinned but was, you know, stripped of the title. But Thunder Rosa can't do the same. I personally think they should do that with Thunder Rosa. Curious what you all think. I want to thank you for joining me for this episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite. My voice might sound a little bit raspy. We have been doing a shitload of talking. We had a show Saturday. We had a show Sunday. We had a show Monday. We had two shows technically on Tuesday. And now we got Wednesday. So I hope everyone enjoys the rest of the week. Now, this Saturday, the Don Tony show, it will return 11 a.m. because SummerSlam does not happen until the nighttime. Kevin Castle and yours truly are discussing the possibility of doing the SummerSlam review on Sunday night instead of Tuesday night. Now, we will not be streaming it live on YouTube because the DTKC show will not be video unless we're both video. And we're not doing video. We're keeping it separate out of respect for Kev. So we may do the same format like we've been doing on Tuesdays. Kevin and I will stream live on Patreon for our Patreon family, which is only fair because they help keep, you know, these shows in business. This shit gets very, very expensive, and, you know, it's trying to get revenue is not very easy. That's why so many people are going under paywalls, you know, or they try to clickbait you into checking out this stuff. We don't do that here. We give you straight up everything, you know, and so it's only fair that we give a little something back for our Patreon family. But what that also means is that as soon as the live stream is over, it's online at dontony.com, and all the audio platforms, wherever you tune into the shows, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Amazon, you know, Google Play, however you tune into our shows, my shows, the show will be available. So I will make an official announcement probably Saturday once I go over everything with Kev, and look forward to that review. And make sure you check out the preview if you haven't done so already. So I am Don Tony. Enjoy the rest of your week, everyone. Wednesday Night Dynamite is over.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.